Hi there, folks. This is the Mailwright Real Estate Agent Show, episode 70, folks. And we've got a fantastic show here, folks. We've got a special guest who's going to be talking about a really interesting subject. I'm going to let him introduce himself first, and his name is Darren Cecil. So, Darren, like to introduce yourself to the audience.
Good morning, Darren Cecil. Excited to be here. Thanks so much for inviting me.
And where are you based, and what do you basically do at the present moment?
I'm based in San Diego, California, and blessed to be in such a beautiful place. And what I do for companies, I do a lot of management consulting. In the past, I've hired, evaluated, and trained salespeople. And so I know a lot about the way sellers sell and certainly buyers buy.
That's great. And I've got my great co-host, Thomas J. Nelson. I'd like to introduce yourself, Thomas.
Thanks, Jonathan. Good morning. Yes, Thomas J. Nelson here. I'm in San Diego, California as well. I'm a residential realtor, and you can find me on my website at thomasjnelsonrealtor.com.
And I'm a little bit ill today, folks, so I'm taking lots of fluids and feeling sorry for myself, but that's fine, isn't it, folks? So what our topic today, folks, is, which is Darren is expert on, is effective communication in the whole sales process. Soon as a client, that first phone call or email, throughout the whole process, we're going to be talking about effective communication or the lack of it. There's a lot of lack, I feel. So, Darren, how do we start the conversation? What are some of the main pitfalls and problems that you see on a regular basis around effective communication?
Well, so some people come from families where they express their emotions quite a bit. You know, they're hugging before they go to the restroom. They go, "I'll be back soon," and they hug. Some families are raised in a family where they handshake at funerals, or they write "love always" on a Christmas card, that I could deny that was my writing. That's the family I was raised in. And so I finally have the guts to tell this woman that I love her. And I've seen the old movies. Someone says, "I love you." Someone says, "I love you too." It's typically in a field of flowers or at the beach. There's music playing in the background, and they run in slow motion, and there is an embrace. And so I say to this woman, who's now my wife, "I love you." And she looked at me and said, "I love you too." And I was like, that's not what I expect to happen, because this is a huge risk for me to say. And so then I said it louder, because when we think that we're not being clear in communication, we typically do two things. We either yell it, or we slow it down. So I said to her, "I love you." And she looked at me and said, "I love you too." And there was no music. There was no running. Obviously, she doesn't understand me. So I said, "I love you," with great passion. And she looked at me and she said, "Show me." And I thought to myself, if she thinks she's getting a ring right now, she should just flatter herself. And she said, "No, where I come from, pal," and anybody in a relationship calls you pal, especially of the different gender, that's not typically an endearing quality. She said, "You need to show me." And I thought, wow. So I went out and bought this book, Dr. Seuss, All the Places You'll Go. And I wrote in it, "This book reminds me of all the places we've gone together. I look forward to going more places with you in the future. Good luck next year in your doctorate in San Francisco. Love always, Darren." And this woman burst into tears and she said, "You do love me." I found out that very day that not everybody, which is sad for me, communicates the same way that I do. You see, my wife is a very visual communicator. I hope that makes sense, gentlemen.
Yeah, absolutely.
It certainly does. I'm English, so I'm excused for any form of effective communication. But before we go on, I need to tell the audience about our sponsor, our fabulous sponsor, folks, Easy Agent Pro, who has sponsored the show for this month and next month. What does Easy Agent Pro does? It's a fantastic website solution, folks, at a really price point that almost any serious agent can afford. And what they specialize in is a website that really generates quality leads for you. And I've seen the back end of their system, and I've spoken to some of their key staff, and I was extremely impressed, folks. So I would highly endorse you that you go to Easy Agent Pro website, find more about their product, and maybe try them out, folks. So we're coming back to effective communication. Like I say, I'm English, so I feel that sometimes, well, actually, to be serious, actually, I want to ask you a question about culture, actually, because I find that, how to put this, not only my accent, but also I find that what I consider to be really funny in my English perverted humour doesn't always go down very well with an American audience. So is also culture an important thing to consider?
Absolutely.
Actually?
Absolutely. Would you like me to talk about now, or should we talk about that after?
Talk about it now.
Absolutely. Well, I just want to jump back. So I found out that my wife was very visual. And so here's some information for your listeners. 55% vision, taking information visually. We have all three, but we typically have one over the other. So 55% of the population take in information in a visual way. And so what does that mean? Visual folks taking information, they prefer charts and graphs and maps. And they don't like talking on the phone. Why? Because they can't see what the person looks like. Those are visual people. I am an auditory person. And the thing about auditory people, if you just counted that I said five times, you're probably an auditory communicator. We listen to the spoken word. If I ever get mugged, someone will get away with it unless they start speaking, and then I'll nail them. You see, the last song on the radio I hear, I can wake up middle of the night listening to that in my head, and I have to get it out. I remember meeting with a client years ago. My daughter was probably three, and we were listening to a Disney sing-along before my meeting. And here I am in front of a high-powered CEO, and I'm singing Tale as Old as Time, Song as Old as Rhyme, Beauty and the Beast. I cannot get it out of my head. That's the curse of an auditory person. I can't go camping by the ocean because the waves never stop after midnight. I thought that they might, and they don't. So all night long, there's crashing. My mother-in-law has a grandfather clock. One day I'm going to assassinate it because it just bongs all night long. See, that's an auditory person. I don't like charts and maps and graphs. I listen to sounds to create my opportunity to learn. And then there's the kinesthetic people. Kinesthetic people learn by doing. They touch it, they feel it, they smell it. They use any senses besides seeing and hearing. And if you ever go to a movie theater and people are always moving around, they can't get comfortable, it's too warm, it's too cold, they're kinesthetic people. When they sit down, they feel the chair. Now, how can your listeners take advantage of this? There's one sentence they can ask their potential clients. I have a lot of information to share with you, Thomas. Would you like me to walk you through it, talk you through it, or show it to you? If they say walk, you give kinesthetic phrases like, does that feel right to you? Can you wrap your arms around this concept? That hits the nail in that hits the nail on the head. That's walk. If they say talk, that's, can you hear what I'm saying? Does that resonate well with you? You know, that rings a bell. And then if they say, show it to me, you can either have them go on to a webcast or a podcast. You can have them go to their website. You can have them do whatever makes sense visually. And you'll use words like, do you see what I'm saying? Do you have a clear vision for this? Does this look right to you? You see what happens? The problem that people have in communication is they tend to utilize their style. 55% of the population are visual, 20 are auditory, 25 are kinesthetic. I had a girl, she was 76 years old. She loved to buy gifts. that a 76-year-old woman would love that never had children. I was a 12-year-old boy. I never had a chance to ever appreciate the gifts that she bought, except for the Thinker statue by Rodin, because I could blow that up with firecrackers. You see, she was not giving me the gift that I wanted. She was giving me the gift that she wanted to give me. And many times in communication, we tend to give the gift that we are rather than the gift that we perceive our prospects, our loved ones, those that are important to us would want to have.
That's a really good point that you just touched on there, because the thing I see a lot in my industry in real estate is we're so worried about getting the listing or closing the buyer, we're forgetting to ask what their needs are, how to put them in front of our own needs. Mm-hmm. So that was a great example that, you know, Jonathan asked earlier, and I wanted to ask you as well, this auditory, kinesthetic, and visual, does that go across all cultures, and how do different cultures add to the mix of that?
Well, as far as obviously there's differences culturally, right? But as far as people are visual, auditory, kinesthetic, yes, that tends to be the way. Men typically tend to be more visual than women. If you have to draw it out, I can tell you that something as small as eyes, pictures. You know, in the Asian culture, staring someone in the eye, which we were taught as Americans to look someone in the eye when you're talking with them, is very disrespectful. So there's lots of issues that we could spend show after show after show. A company like Qualcomm will invite me in to talk about when they're sending their people over to different countries, the best way to communicate with folks in that country. So the big thing is eye contact. It's funny. I have a colleague that's an African-American gentleman. He's probably 20 years older than me. He's probably retired now. And his story was his dad used to look at him. And when his son would look at him, he would look down out of deference, out of respect. And his son, and his father would say, "Look at me, boy, when I'm talking to you." So then he would look at his dad in the eye and his dad would say, "Don't you be eyeballing me when I'm talking to you." So he had no idea how he's supposed to look at his own dad. So he'd give a head and shoulder fake. He'd look at him sometimes, look away sometimes. So eye contact, even when you're meeting with a prospect, there's a gender difference too. Men don't typically like to look at other men. If you look at, I can tell you many examples of that. If you go to a bar, why is there a bar? There's a long table. Who used to always go to the bars? Men. Women didn't go to the bars. That's why there's a long table. If you see a group of men in a room, they don't typically stand in a circle. They stand side by side at a networking event. The reason why sports bars in our country are so popular, because I don't have to look at the gentleman I'm sitting next to. We can watch the game and make comments about the game. The reason why business works on the golf course, I don't have to look at you, Thomas. I sit next to you in a golf cart. We look straight ahead. Hopefully you don't run any people over or tip our cart. And the other thing is then I hit the ball and we get back in the cart, and there's men don't typically look at other men. And so even such things as gender communication is significant. And the huddle, just to let you know, if you're a sports fan, if you're a football fan, the huddle came out from Gallaudet University, which is a historically deaf institution. The reason why they created the huddle, and it didn't exist in the NFL for years, because men don't look at other men. There used to be two rows of players. The linemen were on one knee, and the running backs and the receivers were on the other, and the quarterback would address them. The reason why Gallaudet developed the huddle is because they would do plays using hand signs, using sign language, and the other team could see what they were doing. So even something as simple as the huddle is very uncomfortable for men to do, because we don't engage in looking at other men. I promise you, gentlemen, the next time you go to a networking event, when you see men together, they tend to be standing side by side or at least leaning inward. They don't tend to go face to face very long. And women, the problem then when men have conversation with women as far as a prospect and a salesperson is eye contact. It could be too much. It could be not enough. So if we're looking at even gender differences, we have significant challenges within communication.
Wow.
Thoughts or comments on that, gents?
In a conversation, and I'm going to ask you kind of a leading question since I have a little background training with you. Who has the power? Is it the prospect or is it the salesperson?
You broke up. I just started in a conversation as the prospect or the salesperson. I didn't hear that.
Oh, I'm sorry. If in a conversation, who has the power, the prospect or the salesperson?
Well, there's perceived power and there's actual power. And so here's my thought. The person in any relationship asking the questions has the power. Doesn't matter if it's sales or what, in any relationship. God forbid if an officer pulls you over, the first thing they say is, do you know why I pulled you over? And then they'll say, do you have your license and registration? If you start to ask them questions, may I ask you a question, sir? How long have you been an officer? That's not going to go well. If you, Thomas, I know you never violated curfew, and I know why it never violated curfew. But somebody like me that violated curfew, the first question my mom asked would be, here's some questions. Where were you? Why didn't you call? Because I'm old. There was no texting. Why didn't you call? Who were you with? Do you know what time it is? If I said, Mom, can I ask you a question? Did you ever violate curfew when you were my age? What were you doing? Why didn't you call? That's not going to end well. So here's what happens in the real estate relationship. The realtor thinks they have all the power by demonstrating their information. And it's really the one that's asking the questions. And Thomas, as you and I know, when you were in my training years ago, it's the one who asks the best questions tends to get the deal. It's never the one that gives the information. And I look at selling and dating a lot alike. And so if you're on a first date, would you ever take out your yearbook and go, look at this. I was class vice president. I was most popular. I was this. I was that. That person that you're wanting to date would probably think that's quite odd. Well, I think we do that in our business meetings. Here's our marketing materials. Look at all the stuff we have. Here's how I've been written up in this magazine and this magazine. It's weird. And so why would we date and sell differently? And the other thing I would say, just for your listeners' information, is I believe selling is like a date and buying is like a date. So I think just like in every date, each party gets to decide if there's a second date. But right now, we allow, you asked the question about the power, we allow the prospect to be the only one that decides on a second date. They decide if they want to see you again. They decide who they want to bring in the second date, which is kind of weird. They want to bring chaperones on the second date, right? They also decide how much they're willing to pay on a second date. Why would you allow that to take place? At the end of the date, you have the right to say, let's be friends. It's not you, it's me. I'm sure none of you guys got that. You know, I did. You know, it's nothing to do with you, Darren. It's me. I'm just not ready for a relationship. What they really want to say is, I think you're a dirt ball and I have no interest in telling you that. But at least they have the right to tell me no. And at least I have the right to tell them no. Right now, what we allow to have happen is the prospect gets to say if we're going to have a second date, which a prospect gets to say if there's going to be a yes, if there's going to be a no. And the realtor says, okay, let me know. And you would never go on a date.
Yeah, I mean, that's a real problem. It's a real problem in our business because I've always said this to other agents is, you know, I don't go in to my surgeon and tell him how the operation's going to go. And I don't sit up in the middle of surgery and start negotiating the price of that surgery. You know, that's all agreed upon up front. And we go through it. Now I have the choice of surgeon, but once I've made my choice, that's it. You know, I've never understood why an attorney gets that respect or a doctor, but a realtor somehow just decides that it's the prospect that ultimately decides all these things.
Can I share a perspective on that?
Yes, please.
So I don't know if you grew up in the United States, you grew up somewhere else. I'm not sure. You may have an accent. You may not have an accent. I grew up in Boston. And when I was a kid, when I said to my mom, hey, who is that person over there? My mom probably said, hey, those are strangers. Feel free to walk up and introduce yourself to people because they're people you haven't met yet. I'm sure they're really nice people. I don't know if you got that growing up. But I didn't get that grown up. In Northern California, Thomas, everyone's friendly. Everything's wonderful. You probably were able to do that, right?
No, we got the don't talk to strangers speech.
Why?
You know, I think that was just mom's way of protecting us when she knew she couldn't keep her eyes on us at all times.
Right, because what could happen with strangers?
Well, yeah, all the things you worry about, abduction or right. You know, all the other stuff.
Right. So I learned as a kid, don't talk to strangers. Right. Also, if I said to my parents, how much money did we make last year? That would not be a good conversation in my home. It would be, that's none of your business. That's right. Rude. That's impolite. We don't right. talk about money. So the reason why your realtors have a challenge, there's something called transactional analysis. There's three tapes in our heads. There's an adult tape, a parent tape, and a child tape. And the parent tape and the child tape shut off when we're 9 years old. Thomas, have you ever said something to Wyatt that you could hear your parents say to you when you were a kid, and you said to yourself, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just channeled my mom right there. Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, and Darren's referring to my son, Wyatt. And yes, I have literally had those moments and you just stop and you think, ah, she got me.
Yeah. Right. But before we learn more about Thomas's childhood remarks, folks, we're going to go to our break, and then we're coming back and we're going to hear more about Thomas confessing. We'll be back in a second, folks.
Thanks, Oprah.
Interested in a website that uses modern lead capture to help you generate real estate leads from blogs, SEO, and social media? Well, if you are, then you need LeadSites. LeadSites uses custom apps to help agents get better results online. Learn more by going to easyagentpro.com. That's easyagentpro.com. And when you're at the site, make sure you look at the bullet points, see everything that it does. Easy Agent Pro is excited to be a proud sponsor of the Real Estate Agent Podcast.
We're coming back, folks. We're coming back for our break. And Thomas, so I'm waiting for Thomas's further confessions, folks.
Well, I think I'll defer to Darren's wisdom at this point.
Well done, my friend. That was well done. And I don't know if it's wisdom, but it's thoughts. You can decide if it's wisdom for yourself. So I sent my kids to their room a few months ago, and I said, go in your room and think about it, because that's what my dad used to say. And so I walked by 10 minutes later, and I yelled, I don't hear any thinking going on in there. Now, what does thinking sound like, guys? Right? Doesn't sound like anything. And so I said to myself, oh, my gosh, I just channeled my dad. You see, if you are saying those things, that proves something called transactional analysis. There's three tapes in our heads. There's an adult tape, a parent tape, and the child tape. And the parent tape and the child tape shut off when we're 9 years old. So for your listeners out there, if you have children before they're 9, you have a chance. If you don't, a lot of that stuff has already been ingrained, good, bad, and ugly. And so I learned as a kid, don't talk to strangers, don't talk about money. If a realtor approaches me, they're a stranger looking for my wallet. And that's why I'm uncomfortable talking about them. The other thing I might be uncomfortable about is their job is to get the highest commission they can. And I don't think that they're looking out for my best interest. Thomas, I know you do an outstanding job of looking out for someone's best interest. But I tell you, here's the first question your realtors should ask potential prospects. There's two questions, actually. The first is, hey, let me ask you a question. Why don't you sell it yourself? I know that's blasphemy, but they're already thinking it anyway. So then you could say, hey, let me ask you another question. You probably are really good in the law. You probably have a lot of time on your hands. So you ask questions that they have may or may not have thought of. Then they say, I need a realtor. But everyone thinks, at least in San Diego, how hard can it be? I throw out a few cookies on a Saturday. I've got 4 bids by 5 o'clock to choose from. The house is sold within a week. That's the perception that people have. And we know realtors do a lot more than that. The second question you want to ask yourself is, to your prospect, have you ever hired a realtor before? Because you're missing out on a lot of information. Before I met Thomas, I can tell you, I had not met honest realtors. And I can tell you horror stories about it, but our time does not allow that to happen. When you ask questions about my experience with hiring, working with realtors, that's going to give you a lot of indication on the best way to communicate with me, going back to effective communication. The other thing, what happens is, as far as the sales arena, as I talked about the adult, the parent, the child, if you look at that information, a child wants to buy something. The child wants something. Madison Avenue, that sells, you know, all our commercials and advertising, has figured this out. If I drink this product, then this is going to happen. If I open a Coors Light right now, then a locomotive is going to crash through the wall, and there's going to be a bunch of beautiful women on that locomotive. Who are they appealing to? They're appealing to my child. And then what happens in a real estate analogy, what happens with realtors is my child likes the house. It's either it's the biggest one I ever had. It's unlike anything I've ever seen. It's my child wants the house. And then what happens is my parent tape says, you deserve the house. You work hard for your money. You deserve this home. But then the adult has to justify the expense. We've done comps in the neighborhood. This is a better deal. The amazing right now with the interest rates, I want to jump on board before it goes up yet again. We've done research on the schools. This is the best place for our family at the moment. But do not forget, the child wants to buy the house. You know, I had a client and she said to me, my child didn't buy my car. I said, really, what's the name of your car? And she said, Harold. Does an adult name their car a person's name? No, a child does. Then I said, well, what color is it? She said, shark blue. I said, shark blue, not blue, shark blue. And I said, why do you have a shark blue car? She said, I like to accessorize with what I'm driving. That's a kid. I also like to drive fast. That's a kid. And it also makes me look good. That's a kid. You see, the child bought the car. And then if I asked her why she bought the car, she would say, because I got a really good lease rate, because I was able to get everything I wanted to. You see, in the realtor profession, you have to understand there's a child, there's a parent, and there's an adult that's at play, and you have to appeal to their child. Comments on that? I know that was long-winded, and I was also about a psychobabble, some of my clients call it, but it's a really powerful tool to understand.
So to quickly recap, you know, in the first part of the show, we were talking about the different types of communication, the list, the auditory, the visual, and the feeling touching type. And then we've gone on to the subject of the, we got these three types. We've got the child, we've got the adult, and how does, if you're in those first few meetings with a client, how does an agent assess, are they talking to the child or are they talking to the adult? And what are the best, is it best to talk to the child or the adult? Am I making sense?
Absolutely, total sense. So when they first meet you, you're a stranger looking for their wallet, so they don't trust you. So it's their adult that's out, which is the analytical, logical, you know, tell me what's going on here. It's your job as a realtor to get them in their child because the child wants to buy something. Here's what a lot of times happens. Let's say a not as sophisticated agent as Thomas, you know, meets with a prospect like that, huh?
Checks in the mail, buddy.
Yeah, that was good. And meets with a prospect. And let's say that person's an attorney. Here's what the attorney is going to say. Or a high, strong, powered individual, or someone that likes power. You know, they'll say things like, how long have you been a realtor? What do you get for this commission? Remember, whoever asks the questions has the power.
Right.
So it's your job to get that person in their child's state. The best way to do that I know how, well, I don't have time for that one. I can't do that one. I'll do another one. The best way to do that would be to ask for help about your personal life. You see, people love to help people, but we've been told as kids never to ask for help. So if I ask Thomas, hey, Thomas, I'm going to be in your area for a lunch meeting, and I won't say your area so people don't show up, but I know where you live. That's scary for you. And what's one good place that I can go to? And then he says, well, you go to this place and tell them Thomas sent you, and this is what you want to order. When they're helping you, their guard comes down. When their guard comes down, they're more likely to get out of that adult perspective. And so I've received pitching lessons from my son from Major League Baseball players or former Major League Baseball players. I've received so many blessings when people are able to give me help. When they give you help, they're going to want to do it for two reasons. One is, if Thomas tells me about the restaurant and he says, tell him Thomas sent you, he wants to do it to demonstrate that he's better than me. And that's good, because I don't care if he's better than me, because at least we want to connect. The second way he may wish to, when I ask for help, is because he feels better about himself when he's actually helping me. And so it doesn't really matter, but that gets them out of their adult state when they're helping you. And the best way for you to get them in their child, when you ask, such as, have you ever hired an agent before? And you say, tell me about that. Oh my goodness. What else do they do? What else do they do? When you become a nurturing parent and you're questioning, not critical parent, but a nurturing parent, and you're questioning, what happens then is then their child comes out. Because if you have a nurturing, loving parent, then that childlike state can come out. And that's the one that's going to buy the house, is that child. Did I answer that question, gents?
Yeah. I mean, that makes total sense, because, I mean, what you're doing is also demonstrating that you're actually taking an interest in that person by asking them questions, and that the tell me more when they bring something up, and then the rescue me. I always like that technique. I've seen you do that very successfully a lot. In brief, I have seen somebody come up to Darren, tell him that this doesn't work. I've watched him do it to that person right in front of me. That person buys right into the rescue me, and suddenly the rapport's there. After this guy just 30 seconds ago told Darren this technique won't work.
I remember that story. Yeah.
I also like to ask you, and I was extremely guilty of this, Daryl, but I'm not saying that I'm not as, I think I'm a little bit less guilty because I'm aware of it. I think if you're aware of things, then you stand a chance of doing something about it. And mm-hmm. what I'm getting about is people, there's a difference between questions and statements. And I think a lot of salespeople, let's say I have a possible client, I'm selling them like a, getting them to hopefully agree to a $15,000 website proposal, mm-hmm. and they say to me, I've read the proposal, you're very expensive. That's not a question, that's a statement. And I think a lot of people, and when that last happened to me, I didn't reply, I was totally silent. And then they said, did you hear me? I said yes. And they said, "What, are you going to answer it?" I said, "Well, no, because it was a statement, wasn't it?" I said, "Yes, I'm very expensive. I don't think I'm expensive. I think it's what value you're going to get from the website that's the really important thing." And I love the opportunity to go in more detail about how this website is going to get a fantastic return for you and really help your business. But I think a lot of people feel that they're going to answer statements, not questions.
Right. Yep.
What would you say to that?
Well, it's like you hit it spot on. You know, I think you never answer an unasked question. You know, if someone says your price is too high, it's a statement. You know, if I say to you, my favorite color is blue, you don't need to ask me a question about that. It's a statement. That's just a statement. And so if you feel the need, you can turn that into a question. I totally, totally agree with you. I would like to jump into something very quickly. When someone says your price is too high, and you're right, you're silent, make them turn it into a question. And then you can always turn it back on them. If they're a professional, you say, may I ask you a question? What is it you do for a living? Of course, you probably already know it because you already found out. Are you the most expensive in town? Are you the cheapest in town? What are you? Well, we provide a lot of value. So are you the cheapest in town? No. Well, can I ask you a question? Why aren't you the cheapest in town? And they'll say, because of this, that, and the other thing, we've been around for a long time. We have an amazing reputation. Whatever they say, you can say, we share a lot in common. And then that conversation about you're being expensive goes away because they can't refute their own data. So if they tell themselves the reason why they're not the cheapest in town is because of reputation, is because of, you know, excellence, it's because of, you know, whatever else it is, you say the exact same thing. We have a lot in common.
Darren, so, how would you address it if they didn't own their own company, but you want to take them down that path? So let's just say they're an employee somewhere, so they're not in charge of the pricing. Like, how else could you handle them?
Well, you can do the same thing about the company, but let's say they're a stay-at-home person, just for the sake of argument. And then I would kind of flip it and I'd say, can I ask you a question? When you purchase items, do you typically go for the cheapest, a good value, or the most expensive in town? Okay. I had a grandmother-in-law that used to pay full price for everything and loved to tell people she paid full price. As a matter of fact, there was a jewelry store that she would only go in after hours. And I think when she was coming up the elevator, they pushed another button and the all new price sheet came popped up in front of all the items. It was called the Esther price. You know, it wasn't value pricing, it was Esther pricing. So you find out. And if they're the cheapest, well, we always go with the cheapest. May I ask you a question? How does that typically work? You know, you've never been disappointed because of this, that, and the other thing. So you can still have that same conversation. Once again, the one who's asking the questions has the power. And so anything you can do to demonstrate questioning will go really well for you to get with the point that you're trying to get across. Did that answer your question, Tom?
Yeah, no, I think it's also important to point out, just in hearing the way you're using these questions, you're not on the defense. These are not defensive questions. They're offensive questions. And I don't mean they're offending. I mean, but you're not set back on your heels when you're asking these questions, because otherwise doesn't that put your prospect on their defense?
Yep. When you're on the defensive, you know what that says to you? Your child is out.
Ah.
Okay. And the first person that gets emotionally involved in a negotiation, in a call, in a sale, loses.
Would you say that again?
The first person that gets emotionally involved on a sales call at a negotiation time or in a meeting for anything loses. Even when children argue, my daughter could be wrong, but she's so good at getting my son emotionally involved that he loses.
That's a great point. I thought that was worth repeating.
Yeah, another thing I would like to ask you, I've observed, and it's just not around the real estate industry, it affects a lot of industries, is a lot of people who are in you know, service environments where there's an element of actually pitching and selling product or service,
mm-hmm.
they have a tendency to want to talk a lot about themselves and about
yes.
what they did in the past, and
yes.
I think obviously credibility is important, but also
yes.
So getting a balance between talking about the past, which is linked to credibility, but overdoing it. Do you think there's mm-hmm. How do you build credibility without overdoing it and talking about past results, which really fundamentally the client probably after a certain amount of time just totally switches off?
Sure. I tell all the clients I've ever worked with over the years, if you're going to do any bragging, it should come from your clients' mouths. So you tell stories about ways you help the client through their eyes and through their ears and through their mouth and has credibility. So if someone says to me, Darren, why would I invest in your training program? I would say, well, you know, I had this client, his name was Juan. He worked for a company called Harbor Packaging and he was a hostage. He didn't want to be in my training. And so one day I looked at him like the first couple of weeks, I said, you hate being here, right? And he said, yes. I said, give me 3 weeks and we can negotiate a hostage settlement. He's like, no, I'm stuck for 3 years. I said, no, you're not. If you're not liking it, we'll get you out. But you got to give me 3 weeks. So fast forward probably a couple months later, he walked up to me and said, you've changed my life. Not my sales life, my life. I'm a different person. I want to write a check tonight for you, for my brother. because you've changed my life. I want you to say, I want you to change his. And I've worked with a couple other family members since then. So Thomas, I don't know if that makes sense, but that's why Juan decided to partner with me. So you tell bragging and you do it through a third party and you're not a bragger and you're not a liar. I mean, I could tell you, Thomas, that you didn't know this, that a couple of years ago, my consulting firm was the number three consulting firm in San Diego. Number one was Rady School of Business, UCSD. I can't compete with the university. Number two was Ken Blanchard Companies, which is a huge, huge company. Number three is me. I promise you, I didn't get one bit of business by being the number three consulting company in San Diego. They don't care.
Right. All they hear when they hear number one or number three is that means you're going to be more expensive.
Yes. Or they're like, who cares? I did meet someone once that called me up and said, why are you number three and I'm number 10? And wanted me to proceed to talk about in the book of lists why he was not higher. And then he met my wife and he said, hey, I just want to let you know I'm number 10. He's number three and I can't figure out why. And my wife was brilliant. She looked at him and she looked at his girlfriend and said, but you're number one in her heart and isn't all that matters anyway. So I thought that was brilliant. They don't care.
They don't care. They don't care. I think it's fabulous. I think we're coming to the end of the show, Daryl, but before we actually end, are there any kind of, you know, because we've covered, I think we've covered three main areas through the conversation, and hopefully we've made our listeners, you know, going to make our listeners think a bit more deeply about how they communicate and how effective is their sales communication. But are there any kind of tips or tricks or action points which you might be able to point out which would enable some improvement over, like, say, a three-month period? Some things that people should really look at that would enable them to improve their communication?
Sure. Thanks for asking. So I have a former client whose husband was a professional gambler. And if you talk to a gambler, they'll tell you everyone has a tell. And so here's some things for visual, auditory, kinesthetic. It's very simple. If you ask a visual person a question when they're thinking, they tend to look up in the air because they're looking for the answer. They use their hands a lot when they speak. And they'll say things like, does that look good to you? Do you see what I'm saying? If you get that, then give people information back in a visual way. As far as auditory, Thomas knows if he speaks to me for a period of time, if he asks me a question, I'll look to the side, close to my ears, and I'll keep my hand in front of me. It won't be way up here, and it won't be by my side, but it's in front of me. And I'll say things like, do you hear what I'm saying? You know, does that resonate well with you? If I'm using those phrases, give me information back in an auditory way. And if I ask someone a question and they look down when they're thinking towards their heart or their gut, they're probably kinesthetic. They won't use their hands a lot when they speak, and they'll say things like, can you wrap your arms around this concept? Does that feel right? Can you grasp this situation? That hits the nail on the head. If they're using those phrases, give them information back in a kinesthetic way. Once again, don't be like my Aunt Ruth that loved to buy gifts that a 76-year-old woman would like. Buy gifts that someone that they could actually appreciate. And I promise you, I only got to appreciate one gift from my great Aunt Ruth. Don't be that way. Don't communicate with what you know. Communicate with what you think those people are. Because here's my last two thoughts that I learned this once. People like to do business with people they know, like, and trust, which you hear all the time. And here's another one. People like to do business with people who are like them. So if you come across kinesthetically, if I give you information back kinesthetically, that's, you're going to connect with me. You're going to say, that guy gets me. And you'll want to be around me more. So that's kind of the tells and the tips that I would give in the last remaining moments of the podcast.
Oh, that's fantastic, Darren. So, Darren, how can people learn more about you or contact you and learn more about effective communication?
Well, thanks for asking. This just a simple way. I'd love to talk with your folks personally. So the best way is my cell phone, and that's 858-752-8481, because that's, once again, it's 858-752-8481, because that's the best way that I think is a way to have a connection, is just to have a conversation. I can have. I might be able to offer a suggestion, and maybe they can offer me suggestions, tell me how wrong I am, and I look forward to that as well.
And I will be making sure the show notes are available this week, folks. So, and we'll have that number in the show notes, folks. So, Thomas J. Nelson, how can people contact you?
Well, they can either come on to my website, thomasjnelsonrealtor.com, or I'm on Facebook and I'm on LinkedIn, of course. So any way, shape or form you want to reach out to me, I respond quickly. And Darren, I want to say thank you real quick for joining us today. I've taken several classes from you. I still have 4 pages of notes there in front of me.
That's great. And folks, if you want to get hold of me, it's either two of the most effective ways are from email, jonathan@mail-right.com, or just go on my personal Twitter feed at Jonathan Denwood, and both I check about 2-3 times a day. So folks, this was a fantastic podcast. What I would say, if you enjoy the show and you got value from it, please spend a little bit of time with iTunes and leave us a review. It really does help the show. And we love seeing what people say about the show as well. And we'll be back next week with more knowledge that will make you a more effective real estate agent. See you next week. Bye.